Welcome to episode 5 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is October 30th, 2011. I'm Matthew Furlough, and this is my co-host, James Furlough.
Hi there. Also conveniently, his brother.
Also conveniently. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, the soap opera that is the corporation's dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. And James is going to have a brief disclosure for us.
I would like to disclose that was an awesome intro. Clearly, you've been working on it. I like it. It was good. I would also like to disclose that I work for a small company called Hewlett Packard, and Matthew works for a slightly smaller one called called Genentech. And what's really important about this is, even though we are giving our opinions, we do not represent our company's opinions. So at all times, we're referring to ourselves, and we should always say, "I think." And if we happen to say we, like if I'm talking about HP going, oh, we did this, or we think this, more importantly, we meant to say I. So just something to keep in mind. These are our opinions, only our opinions, no matter how right they are. HP and Genentech do not get credit for them.
Right. All right. Thank you very much. So I'm pretty excited about the show this week. We got some exciting stuff to talk about.
We do, definitely.
And I think you wanna start us off with some of the last week goodies?
Yeah, so this was one that actually was technically from last Wednesday, and it just took a while to get on in my radar, or at least to fully digest it. And it kind of has to do with this whole, like, one up on Wall Street, or I honestly haven't been following the protests at all.
One up on Wall Street.
But so it's kind of related to that, from what I can gather. But the idea, yeah, it starts off with as protests against financial power sweep the world this week. So it is related to that. So scientists, people who are smart, have they decided to create like this. Think of it like a neural network, or they wanted to like figure out how all the different companies are connected, and they went through and they identified 43,000 different transnational corporations, and you know, and what they 43,000 different like companies in the world, pretty crazy, right?
Nice.
Yeah, and then what they, yeah, and then they, and they, once again, the question was like, how are companies connected? And I think that this is relevant because, you know, we are talking about like the corporate opera, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's like, so is there really one of them? So what they found was that there are a core of 1,318 companies with interlocking ownerships. And I actually have like a picture. Basically, it looks like a big ball with a bunch of green lines all going into the middle. and saying they are all, you know, so it went from these 43,000 down to 1,300, and what they found was that on average these 1,300 companies were, they had like 20 connections to other companies, like they had an ownership piece, or there's someone on the board that's related to some other company, you know, that kind of thing. But then it gets even crazier, and they could say they have something that's called a super entity.
If I can interrupt really quick, just okay. So I can kind of, I know you're on a roll, but
yeah, I know.
So this is kind of, I know sometimes Facebook, you know, just to kind of bring it down to earth, Facebook has like, they'll show you your friend connections and friend connections with friend connections, and they'll show you your network of friends and how they're all kind of connected.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And allow you to visualize that. Is this sort of similar in that, except it's, instead of friend connections,
people,
it's ownership?
Yeah, exactly.
And corporations.
It's like companies, right? And how they're related to revenue. And it's more, and it's important to note here that it's just like there's some sort of connection. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have a controlling interest or, you know, that kind of thing. It's just like they're somehow there's related to them in an ownership sense. You know, it might be like they own a significant number of stock, you know, whatever. An example was like at the time, like Steve Jobs owned 5% of Walt Disney. That's a connection, right? I mean, sure. I mean, and he was also on the board, and so I'm not sure. Does that count as like two connections, or is that just one? You know, I just don't know. And I'm not going to take the time to find out. So, you know, whatever. But what they basically found was that there's what's called a super entity, which was there are 147 companies that are like super, super tightly knit. And these 147, remember, of the 43,000 have some sort of effect on 40% of the world's economy. I'm just going to dramatic pause, let that sink in for a bit. You know, not surprisingly, like the top 20 include banks and investment corporations. So, I mean, it's kind of crazy when you think about like a while ago when they were talking about like too big to fail. You know, from a revenue standpoint, they probably could fail. But when you start thinking about like their actual effect on the world, you know, maybe they are. Maybe. I don't know. What's kind of cool, though, is one of their takeaways is not necessarily that, oh, you know, the 919 plus 1 equals 100 representing each other or whatever the – oh, man. I am so glad we're not live because I would just – I'm sure I offended somebody. But
the 99 plus 1.
What was I even saying? I don't even know now. The point is that these people in some ways they self-govern each other because they all have, you know, they're all trying to make money, and so they don't want to mess with each other and hurt each other because they depend on each other. I don't know. It was interesting. The whole point of me sharing this is it truly is a soap opera. In all the sense of the word, there are not just triangles. There are, you know, hexagons and octagons going on, you know, where it's just like there are a ton of relationships. And I think that the tech industry, if you were just to zoom in on that, I think is even just as tightly knit and crazy in terms of, you know, they say here an average of 20 connections. I would not be surprised to find that tech companies are, you know, closer to 30 or 40 connections, honestly.
Right.
I don't have the data,
sort of.
But,
you know. Yeah, it's pretty. My two takeaways on this are, number one, it's cool when you have high powered computers that can do this sort of data analysis and visualization automatically to allow you to see these kind of trends. You know, that's the sort of thing that, you know, 100 years ago you couldn't even pretend to do because it just would have, you know, computing that would have been taking way too much manpower.
Totally.
But the other thing is, you know, it starts to bring into the, you know, into light, you know, Apple's strategy of having, you know, billions and billions of dollars of cash on hand. You know, it means that, number one, they're get to be a little more autonomous from some of these other, you know, groups. They're not as tightly knit to them because they have financial independence. And, you know, if they decide that they want to go toe-to-toe with somebody to take over another company or to increase their own, you know, play over the network, you know, if that net, they have the ability to do that, and they don't have to, you know, ally themselves with another bank or part of the super entity. You know, it gives you sort of mobility within that. You know, it's interesting. It'll be interesting to see as we start to understand this new network, and, you know, these kind of articles get written and they kind of proliferate through society, if that changes how companies operate. And because now they can understand it in a way that they could never understand before.
Yeah, it does kind of bring a whole new level of game theory and like Nash's equilibrium when I mean, first of all, it's super complicated, but second of all, you can actually see it and understand it, and you know, you can start to have networks against networks and not just at a single company level. You could have 10 versus 10.
Right.
Like, it's interesting fast. I mean, I'm sure that's already kind of happening, but like you said, it's allowing us to do it at a scale and at a speed that you previously couldn't do. And I don't know, it's kind of exciting, maybe scary, but it, you know, mostly just is interesting.
Right, yeah. It's fun, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Very cool, dude. So, That was last week. How about this week?
So I'll keep running with the ball here. I found all sorts of good news. This one was an interesting one, and I'd love to get your opinion on it. But on Monday, I was reading GigaOhm, and Matthew Ingram wrote a thought piece on, and he asked the question: has Apple missed the social media train? And he talks about, you know, like with Spotify and Facebook, and I believe it's like Audio, and there's that DJ mixing one that I don't remember the name of. You know, there's these companies out here who have, yeah, I'm just doing great, aren't I?
Yeah. It's a good thing we're not getting paid.
Yeah, really. There are these new, like, social music features. You know, like, for example, Spotify, you can share the song, you can share your playlist with people, you can share likes, and it'll even, like, share exactly what you're listening to on Facebook in real time, whether you want them to or not. And and Apple is, I mean, clearly tried to play in this, you know, social space with Ping. And I think we can all agree that that has been less than successful, or at least it wasn't what they wanted it to be. And so the question is, you know, are they missing something in this, you know, this digital social sharing space? Do they know it? Are they doing something about it? Is it way too late? Do you use any of these things? And, you know.
It's an interesting question, you know. I think one of the things that, you know, you gotta, man, I don't know. Yeah, I don't use very many social tools. One of the things that I have been trying to use recently is Twitter. I've been trying to update that. Oh, by the way, at Matthew Dean Furlow.
Good call.
You know, and so I find that for me, it's like I really have this desire to kind of get integrated with social network, but I am really drawn to solutions and products that integrate everything seamlessly.
Okay.
You know, I've kind of mentioned this before, that it's like the reason why I don't post anything to Google Plus is because it's one more number I have to put in. It's one more step. Whereas Twitter, I can text Twitter and it will forward it to Facebook. So that's the reason why I, you know, make comments there. And I think that for Apple, you know, I've got to believe that they're really frustrated because, you know, part of the walled garden is the ability to everything syncs, everything works.
Right.
You know, and with a product like iCloud, you'd think it'd be really easy to kind of move that around and allow more social networking.
Mm-hmm.
But they really do seem to be. So I guess what I should say is that there's some missing ingredient. Apple has the infrastructure to have a really powerful social media network,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Built in to all of their stuff, and that's not going to go away overnight. I think it's unfair to say that Apple's missed the social music train. I think that really what they're looking for is a way to reinvent it, you know, or at least that's what they have to find. You know, unfortunately, the guy that usually is all about reinventing industries isn't working for Apple anymore. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if I think that's one of the first areas where you'll start to see a crack in the armor of Steve Jobs' legacy. Is the fact that he never cracked that nut, and I don't think he really came up with a plan to crack that nut. You're going to have somebody else come in with a really good idea about how to transform that market before Apple's going to be able to bring a product that people will use. But once they do, I have no reason to think that they wouldn't be able to, you know, even take on Google and Facebook in that realm. You know, and I don't know. I think it's premature to say that they missed the train, but I don't think that they necessarily have anything in the pipe that's going to allow them to be a breakout success in that area either.
Yeah, and I mean, and at least in the music space, I mean, well, any space really, content is king. And you know, at this point in time, you know, the problem with like streaming services was they didn't have all the content, and you know, now they do, but so does iTunes. You know, it's not like right. Blockbuster, where all they had were the latest hits and a few of the old ones, and Netflix had 30,000 DVDs just waiting to be shipped to you.
Right.
You know, that's not the case. And that's, you know, Netflix's current big struggle, right, is getting content for streaming. And so it's kind of like, you know, the songs aren't overly expensive. You get to own them. You don't have to be connected once you download them. Really, downloading them is not that hard. And they have every single song you'd want. Yeah, so I guess I would agree with you. If there is a problem, it's not something that needs to be solved in the next 5 years. It's only in the next, or it's going to be like in the next 10, maybe. I don't know.
We'll see. Right.
It was an interesting, you know, have they missed it? Eh, no. Are they winning? No. But they don't have to be right now.
Yeah, I agree. Talking about next 10 years in technology, dude. Did you see any of this stuff regarding the printable CMOS, CMOS circuit development?
No, I didn't.
Okay, dude. This should get you excited.
Okay, I'm ready. Excite me.
So the article was called FinFilm, and which is company, and Park, P-A-R-C, another company, demo printable organic CMOS circuits, and inches closer to an Internet of Things. So this is something that I know you had kind of mentioned, that you thought it would be cool if you could, like, Google search for your keys.
Yes.
Or Google search for that one shirt you really like.
Yes.
This is getting us there.
Good.
This is essentially, so you get, like, a PCB is a way to think about it, you know, printable circuit board,
right,
that you can put into your phone, you put in computers. This is essentially that, except it's on a really thin, light film, and it works so well that you can literally build them as antennas, and so we'll be able to embed these things, full working processors, into clothes.
Cool.
And into even smaller stuff. So this is a pretty huge breakthrough, even though it's, in some ways it's huge, in some ways it's small, because there's still a lot of integrating that needs to be done to bring us to this sort of network of devices that are connected through near field communication and are tethered to the internet and are sort of omnipresent and embedded in everything. There's a tremendous amount, but this was a big stepping stone in that. And pretty exciting technology. You'll be able to do other things like rewritable memory and, obviously transistors if it's a working chip. So the whole idea of having, like, a shirt with, like, embedded LCDs and, like, it has changing images and stuff, this is what's going to, you know, using, like, OLED screens that are all flexible and stuff, this is what's going to power those
That's cool.
devices.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, that's very exciting. I mean, because I do have this dream of literally being able to, you know, go to my phone and be like, where are my keys? And, you know, it'll be like, it's next to the door where you left them. All right, cool. I would love to be able to do that. I would love to be able to put one on the collar of my dog and be like, where's my dog? And have it be like, he's peeing at that tree outside that you've manicured all winter.
Right.
That's what I want. Where's my wife? Or, you know, whatever.
She's manicured all summer long.
I feel like it would be a great spy / stalking tool. There's obviously, you know, privacy issues that you got to work through, you know, blah, 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 whatever. I don't care, because it's pretty awesome. That's cool. It's
worth it.
I like that it'll help power the LCDs too, because I would love to have moving advertisements on my clothing. That would be pretty awesome, actually.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's like, you know, Microsoft, you know, made a commercial a while back where they had a you know, a newspaper, the the Muggle Project, as it's always called, you know, where not the Muggle, you know, where it's the Muggle Project is something else actually, but you know, it's printable, you know, where you have a piece of paper that's all flexible and it has moving stuff.
Right.
Well, and this is this
like
is,
the Daily
this helps
Prophet
because now. Exactly. So this helps because it doesn't require a sturdy,
cool,
solid thing for your silicone to
That's
work.
That's good.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's really important. So very cool, very exciting technology.
Awesome. I can't wait for that to get here. Also, speaking of exciting technology, you'd have to be hidden under a rock to not have heard about the Nest thermostat.
Seriously,
this guy apparently is he's the father of the iPod, I guess. And when you see a picture of it, you go, "Yep." His name is Tony. I think it's Fadell or Faddle. I don't know. He was the chief architect at Apple, and he retired basically. And in the process of, you know, trying to build his dream home with his wife, who I believe was also an HR person at Apple. Yes, she was. They got frustrated with how ugly thermostats looked, I guess. And, you know, saw a need and said, as any good entrepreneur would say, we can do better. So they went out of retirement, got 100 employees, and I think it was like $10 million. And everyone, you know, went like underground secret project, and everyone was like, what are they going to do? Oh, it's going to be amazing. So they unveiled... Drum roll, a thermostat. And, you know, and everyone at first was like, what? but when you look at this thing, I mean, it is genuinely cool. It looks kind of like an iPod Touch, where it's got like a click wheel type of interface. And then it tells you the degrees, whether or not it's cooling or heating, kind of like where your range is. And then it has some like under the hood stuff, which makes it really cool. It has some like some green stuff, right, where it'll... They can have a sensor on, you know, are you around? Is it night or is it day? And so it will be able to adjust the temperature like, oh, no one's home. We're not going to heat the house right now. You know, be able to do things like that. And then it'll also be able to connect into the smart grid stuff and be able to communicate with that and then, you know, help you find, you know, the best times to use it. And they say that, you know, if you're using it, you can – save up to like 20 or 30% on your energy bill.
Man. You know, I as somebody who's worked in the green technology industry, this is something that's you know, I've got I'm always fascinated by it because it's like, you know, you have this century old technology in a thermostat.
Yeah.
It's really simple. All it is it's a you know, they got two metals, one heats up faster than the other, and they're connected, and so it bends. And once it hits the other, once it hits this little button, connects a circuit and turns on your heater. And once it gets hot enough, it, you know, it's the simplest mechanism.
And if you do like I do and get dust on it, it doesn't work as well.
Right. You know, and, you know, it's extremely simple, it's extremely reliable. And it's manufactured at an unbelievably low price. So really and truly, I think a lot of the collective, like, that came and everybody, you know, announced it was this sort of, are you serious? You're trying to, it's a 100-year-old technology. How are you going to improve it? And ironically, I think that was kind of like, you know, when Apple first announced the iPod, it was sort of like, well, this is cool, but really? You know, this is going to be how, you know... A few weeks ago when they had their 10th anniversary, that they kind of went back. And the real question is what is your – what are you offering? Well, obviously they're offering elegance. They're offering usefulness, which is cool. But to me, the thing that's really going to make these things sell off fly off the shelves and really slowly replace thermostats is the fact that the whole idea of being able to – it's like knowing when you're not there and turning off the heater because you're not there.
It's smart.
Learning with you, right? And the fact that it can save such a dramatic amount of money, and you know, and sometimes those sorts of statistics are overblown. But I think that this is definitely a case where just a really simple look in the engineering, you go, yeah, I can improve that if I can put a computer chip in it.
Yeah.
And
Totally.
So it's pretty cool. It's actually a very exciting project. I hope they do really well because it looks, you know, really nice.
But yeah, and I could definitely see, you know, and that's the other thing. I think they're asking like $250 for it, which, you know, is clearly not as cheap as anything else. But, you know, if you're building a new home, you know, you're not even going to notice that. So I think it'll make its way into a lot of newer homes, maybe not remodels. You know, like what they were doing, right? Building their dream house. They wanted something to put in it. And I could see it definitely. I mean, like, this could be the beginning of new, you know, home appliances, right? Where, you know, I don't know why, but, and this is probably what people originally thought with a thermostat, but could a fire alarm be a similar, you know, hold similar types of things?
Yeah.
Granted, the power isn't a big deal, but, you know, a warning system. What if when it went off, you got a text message? You know,
right.
You know these things, so even if you're away, oh, something's going on, you know? You know, so they talk about, you know, obviously this is related to heating and air. Is there something that you can do with electricity along those same lines? You know, and I just think, like, putting information in front of people and then, you know, making them beautiful so that people are like, oh, man, this, I want to show this off. And there's all sorts of opportunities like that in the kitchen, I think. You know, that's just a place waiting.
Yeah.
And I
think part of the brilliance of starting with a thermostat is that it's something that you interface on a really regular basis, you know, and it's not something, you know, it's, you know, to $250, like you said, if you're building a new house, it's almost, you know, this is something somebody will notice. It's like a light switch, you know. You're going to use this all the time. You can point it out, and somebody might go, I'm not going to buy a house over a thermostat. But, you know, people make pretty crazy decisions, you know. Oh, look at this wall. It's not painted. You know, and I could see where if I, you know, if my personal opinion is, if I were going to try to sell a house, I would, without even thinking twice, I would install these thermostats. Because at $250, that could easily increase the value of the house just by just saying, and we've got smart thermostats with smart heat control, and it's super magic.
Well, especially when you say it's going to save you 20 to 30% in energy bills, you know, you could do the math and start to figure that one out pretty easily.
So I actually think they're going to sell a tremendous number of them. And
I agree.
Pretty excited to play with my first one. my iPod of the thermostat world.
Totally agree. It's going to be pretty awesome.
Right.
So ready for this transition? So, you know, one of the things I hinted at was, you know, obviously this has a, like a click wheel type of feel to it. You know, so it'll be interesting to see if Apple lets them, you know, if there's some sort of patent infringement deal going on. I don't think so. I think it'll be fine, honestly. I mean, if I were Apple, I'd go, wow, this is genuinely cool. You're not competing with us. yeah, we endorse it. Let's do, you know, let's put it in our new spaceship. Unfortunately for a company like RIM, they're not having as much success in the whole trademark lawsuit arena. You like that transition?
Nice.
They have announced their new BlackBerry, being they, have announced their new communication. No, it's just their operating system name called BBX, which stands for something, I'm sure. BlackBerry Extreme. Sure. But apparently there's already a company out there called called BBX. They're in New Mexico. And they're filing a lawsuit, of which, you know, RIM's like, dude, they're completely different. You know, they are a, let's see here. What are they? I saw this just like two. They're a software company, but they were, which operating system software? I don't know. Operating systems are software. Sounds relatively close.
If they were a vacuum company, I might buy it, but.
Yeah, well, RIM said that they don't think there's a conflict because the two companies compete in different markets. But Basis, who's this company, Basis International, BI, is arguing there's enough overlap to cause confusion in the minds of consumers. And so basically it wants RIM to stop using the BBX name. So all this to say, like, okay, Rim might win, or they'll have to pay a couple million dollars to settle it. You know, obviously the iPhone was a trademark of Cisco when Apple first came out, and they solved that problem. So you know, so it's not to say that it's DOA, but at the very least, it's just like, poor Rim, dude. They cannot get a break. I mean, I don't feel too bad for him, but you know, just I don't know. One of those things where it's like a courtesy phone call, maybe, you know, just to let them know what's coming and try to work something out. That's one of the reasons why I think it was okay that Apple and Cisco were all right, because I think, you know, Cisco CEO got a call from Apple CEO, and you know, he said, "P.S. Here's what's coming. We know that you hold the copyright. We'll be sending the paperwork to, you know, to figure this one out." You know, and they're like, all right, cool,
right,
whatever.
They, I say, and that's something that, you know, Apple is, that happens to Apple on a regular basis, where they come up with a name and they don't want to blow the surprise, so they kind of take care of it afterwards, and it always comes out. But Apple's so hush hush about it; they just take care of it. They understand, well, this is going to cost us more than we want it to, but you know, whatever, it's part of doing business.
Yeah.
And it's just such a, an example of BlackBerry's floundering, you know, sort of thing, where it's like, why would you even say, well, we don't think there's overlap? There's obviously overlap. Just throw them a couple bucks and get them off your back.
Yeah. Poor, you know? But, you know, and BlackBerry has shown over the last few years that they are inept. So, you know, well, They just don't get it sometimes, and that's frustrating. But you know, whatever.
Yeah. So, talking about news that happened on Tuesday, you and I had a conversation, and the only reason I'm going to say all this is because I want our listening audience to know and be impressed by me. James and I had a conversation Tuesday.
Tuesday. This was Tuesday. Did we mention this was Tuesday? Okay, Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay, Tuesday, about the future of Apple TV. And I made a few predictions. Now, it just so happened that we didn't have a podcast that day. And 3 days later, a couple of other publications made the same prediction. But I
was
there first. So,
clearly, they have tapped our phones.
Exactly. They know. So, I made a prediction, and I'm going to stand by this prediction, although evidently it's obvious. Apple TV is coming. Obviously, Steve Jobs talked to his biographer, and
he's cracked it.
Yeah, and he said, "I've cracked it." And I think that there's a couple of things that need to happen to make the TV simple. Now, Bose has a TV that they sell that has a combined screen, cinema, sound, everything, and it has three wires, three inputs. And everybody kind of put this is like the current height of elegance, simplicity, and design.
Okay.
So Apple's goal has to be, and it's kind of the stated thing, Apple's goal has to get fewer wires than Bose coming into their computer.
Why does it have to be their goal?
Into the TV. Because it's just, you know, it's simplicity, it's elegance, awesomeness. So, okay.
I'm not buying it yet, but okay. So they have, wait. So make sure I understand this. So they have three input wires?
Right. One's power, and then two, I think one's input, one output. I don't really know. To be totally honest, I'm not sure.
You're talking about like holes in the back? Okay, whatever. All
right,
we're good.
Right, holes in the back, yeah. Okay, Apple is going to come out with a device called Apple TV.
Uh-huh.
And it will have no cables. It will have no remotes.
All right.
And it will be beautiful.
Sounds like an amazing television.
All right. So now I obviously need a little explanation.
Let me serve you this one up nice and cold.
All right. Cool, dude. Knock this one out.
Yeah. There you go. So how would someone communicate with this device if there's no inputs?
That's an interesting choice of word, James. Communicate. How would you communicate with it? One way is to use a complicated remote with more buttons than a keyboard, even though all it does is really change the channel for you.
Gosh, that sounds very un-Apple-like.
Yeah, so complicated. I think Apple's solution will be a new product that they just released called Siri. Now, this is sort of an obvious leap that a lot of people have guessed Apple would come to, is ditch the remote, use Siri instead. It seems like something that Siri is perfectly capable of doing. Put a nice camera on it so you can have your entire family sit down and do FaceTime.
Oh, that'd be sweet.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Have a, you know, just normal Apple style, have just a beautiful cinema display, a lot of pixels, a lot of color, awesome looking.
Millions.
Billions, James. We're moving up in this world. Have just a great sound system so that it's all integrated, built in.
Really think they would get into the sound, or you think they would partner up with, like, Bose or somebody?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see if they partnered with somebody. Or maybe it's not even some other brand name that would come in, but I could see it, you know, it's obviously another party that does the engineering work for it.
All right. I could see, like, they could let Yahama do it.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, probably not going to let Samsung touch that one. So Siri is going to be your communication device. And just in case you really, really need to, of course, they'll have some app that you can connect to it with your iPod or your iPhone or your iPad, like similar to the current setup that the Apple TV has. But I think the next generation Apple TV, the iTV, whatever they're going to call it, that is going to be remoteless. And I think that's going to be, you know, going to be pretty exciting.
So I'm going to come back to my, like, you know, sticky point, and you still got to convince me of this. Why not just integrate that into the current Apple TV? Why do they have to have a big honking piece of glass? And if so, how big is this big honking piece of glass going to be?
Interesting question. I think it's because it's the struggle for input number two, as Steve Jobs described it. So input one is obviously cable. Input two is whatever else. Is it your DVD player? Is it your VCR? Is it your video game system? Is it your media center? There's this kind of, over the decades with TV, there's been this continual struggle of, obviously your first input is your cable, but what goes next? And during the DVD VHS transition, that was the war. Which one am I going to put next? You know, Microsoft wants to, when they came out with the Xbox, their goal was to replace your DVD player and your sound system. They wanted to be the box number two.
Your sound system?
Yeah, they wanted to be a media center. Not your sound system, okay, but your CD player.
All right.
They wanted to replace all that. And so I think, and I know that Apple right now is really in this kind of struggle. One of the struggles with Apple TV is, how do you convince people to put that as your input number two and put your DVD and your Blu-ray player and your Xbox behind that? And so it's an interesting problem, but I think by baking it into a TV, you automatically take care of that problem. That's the real temptation. And one of Apple's passions for decades has been high quality screens. You know, it's
that's,
you know,
true.
You know, and they have some of the most beautiful screens out there. And so I think that it's really right up Apple's ballpark. And I could see, you know, obviously they're going to want to get bigger than their cinema display, which is 30 inches, right? 30-ish inches.
27.
So I could see them jumping it up to between 40 and 60 inches.
Wow.
You know, that's just a guess, but you'd really want it to be a centerpiece. Now, the question of how do you get rid of the inputs, because I think that that's something that Apple really wants to do, and I could see them teaming up with something like AT&T and baking the router or the, you know, your Comcast box, whatever, your AT&T box, right into the TV. Take away all the packaging, just put the hardware in there, and then so allowing the cable companies to plug in directly. And then you can do something where you just plug in your cable to, like, your Wi-Fi router. I also think that the next generation will have... they will have to come up with some sort of a, like a sling box type effect that will use AirPlay for your Xbox, for your DVD player, for your Blu-ray player. Because unfortunately, especially with video game systems, I think there's a recognition that you need to have communication into the TV. But I don't think Apple really wants to deal with you plugging that in. And I think that's going to be an additional add-on. I don't think that they're... I think they're... argument is going to be get your movies, get your games, get your whatever through the Apple ecosystem and get your TV, and then we'll also provide an outlet for cable, because I don't think they feel confident in being able to get rid of that yet. And then it's kind of like with the MacBook Air, where they got rid of the CD drive and then sold an add-on in case you really needed it.
Yeah,
and
I could see that.
I think that's going to be their strategy. And so now the real controversial one. This is the one I'm predicting this, because I think it has to happen eventually. I think Apple has the engineering. I know that the technology exists. And I think this is the perfect product to really kind of just blow everybody's mind. I said that there wouldn't be no cables. Obviously, there's an important one that all electronic devices need.
Power.
So how do they take care of power? I think that there's a company that has been working on developing what is called weak magnetic coupling. Essentially, you know how like you have those like little mats that you can like some phones you can like just set your phone on it and it's inductive powering to charge your phone. Well, that's a really kind of... It doesn't take a lot of finesse to charge your phone over short distances, but there's some pretty impressive technology out there that can allow you to charge a device from up to 5 feet away, where you can really literally create an entire field for your devices to get powered with. And I think that at some point in the near future, Apple's going to start baking the receivers into all of their computers, all of their and their TV, and they're going to have an antenna that's just pushing out power out into your living room. No cables. You can just put the computer. You can put this big screen anywhere in your house, you know, or anywhere in the room. Don't have to connect anything. Just say Siri, I'd like to watch Family Guy, and boom, you're watching Family Guy.
I could see that. I could see them putting it. I would actually see them put it into a television, just because. You know, your television doesn't necessarily move. Just like they would put it into your time capsule and your fire port or airport or whatever it's called. And then, you know, but like your laptops and your phones and your iPads, those are mobile. And so those actually you wouldn't – they would connect to your television and, you know, into your time capsule and to your, you know, your other stuff. I could see that.
Yeah,
that'd be pretty interesting. Totally unrelated, but you heard it here first.
You heard it here first, just in case.
All right. You know what I think is interesting is just watching the way that different companies are tackling the communication problem. And I firmly believe that we are once again on the – I don't want to say it. Like, we are watching the beginnings of a new war creep up. and it's how you communicate. You know, obviously – the mouse and the keyboard, you know, has been around for a while and it works great. But there's this new thing, you know, voice is kind of getting in there, and there's gestures that are kind of getting in there, and you know, a touch is kind of gestures, but not really. But I think it's so fascinating looking at the way the different companies are going at it. And, you know, so like, for example, Microsoft, at least right now, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, Microsoft does R&D all over the place, right? But like, they are huge into gestures right now. Think about Kinect, right? That, you know, is all about moving your arms and, you know, using that to communicate to a device. And even recently when they, you know, like last week when we talked about their whole 3D thing, it's all about using gestures to interact. You're still not talking, and but you're moving in order to do it, which is pretty cool. And then you have Apple and, you know, and to some extent Google, who are using voice. And I think one of the cool analogies that I heard is that Apple and Siri is very much like Star Wars, right? Where it's they're droids who have a personality and they talk back to you, and you know, and it's quote smart, and right. You know, and they're kind of independent, and you know, and that's cool. And then Google follows more of the Star Trek, where it's like computer show, you know, outside on screen, and it just really, you know, does it. It's this nameless, faceless, ever-present thing that's just kind of listening for commands, and when you give it the command, it just does it for you. Right. It doesn't say, as you wish, on your command. Let me repeat back to you what you said to make sure I got it right. You know, it doesn't do any of that. And there are all these different interpretations of what they think the future is going to be. I think I had already said this last week, but it was really – it's really striking me as this is the beginning war. And I do think eventually, like we said last week, it will all coalesce to something very similar to Iron Man, which will be awesome.
Right.
But
no, we didn't talk about that last week. We talked about
that. Like we did.
We talked about that on Tuesday.
Okay. So here's also what we said on Tuesday. We gotta not have these midweek conversations.
I know, man. Them. It was a mistake.
So I gave this analogy on Tuesday behind the scenes to Matthew, and his whole thing was like Iron Man. That's where we're all headed. You know, it used to be 2001 Space Odyssey. We've got all the tech for that. Now we're moving on to Iron Man. And because you remember in Iron Man, he's talking to Jarvis, and he's giving it commands, and Jarvis is talking back, and he's doing things, and he's looking up information, and he's, you know, providing him this. And then there's also, like, the 3D part of it where, you know, he's looking at all the different parts, and he's able to literally, like, put his hand into the digital, you know, rendering of his machine and lift up his arm and, like, wiggle it around and, you know, and looking at it, it's like, there's 3D, it's gesture-based. And he's, like, and he's whipping stuff around Minority Report style on its touch screens that he's touching. And it's like, that's the future. That's where we're headed. That is now the new game plan, which I couldn't help but notice, but that's a little bit more Apple as opposed to Google when it comes to voice. So, you know, there's that.
Well, and don't forget the fact how smart his house was with the Nest thermostat.
Yeah, you know? That's right. Yeah, it looked very cool. I look at that and go, you know, that was, you know, an obvious dream, and you know, we're slowly catching up to it, which is very, 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 very exciting.
Right. Very exciting.
But yeah. So I would actually like to switch gears to talking about what was on Wednesday's news. And then we'll have a little quick commercial break right after that, unpaid, but nonetheless. Mm-hmm. So on Wednesday, there was an article that was talking about Bluetooth 4.0, and I honestly don't know. They were like, "This is a big deal." I was like, "Cool, but why?" And I think that you could shed some light on why that's cool. Maybe.
So yes, iPhone 4S unveiled its Bluetooth 4.0 communication. Now, for those of you who are paying attention, or weren't paying attention, rather, Bluetooth is a short field communication, wireless communication. Originally, it was used for audio, was one of its big uses. So, like all your Bluetooth headphone sets with your cell phone. Obviously, most mice and keyboards nowadays, it's very, you know, it's very old-fashioned to have wires. You know, everything's wireless. And it almost all runs over Bluetooth communication. One of the differences between Bluetooth and Wi-Fi is Wi-Fi, every Wi-Fi chip has what's called an IP address, your internet protocol address, and so when it connects to the World Wide Web, it's able to, you're able to send messages with your IP address targeted. So if you send it to another system, it can bounce around the world and then come back to you, and everybody knows where it came from, where it's going, based on that IP address. With Bluetooth, you don't have a similar type of protocol. It's all sort of kept. It's an in-house network, so your computer and your
phone. Is that kind of like a peer-to-peer network, kind of? Or is that different?
Peer-to-peer is different because it's your messages are still bounced from router to router all around the world.
Really?
It's just, yeah. You still ride the same network. Well, the Bluetooth doesn't set up a network is essentially what the difference is it directly connects. So one of the advantages of that is the potential for security is a lot higher because you actually have to be there's nobody else that's handling the requests as information's going by. And what Bluetooth 4.0 has really done is it's really upped the communication standard to allow for a tremendous amount of different type of information to be easily moved around. And so what can happen is instead of it just being sound, where one manufacturer can build a device with sound in it, and one manufacturer can build a device with, one has a Bluetooth that sends sound, the other one receives sound, like with a phone and a headphone set.
Mm-hmm.
You can do a lot of other stuff. One of the things that's mentioned is information about, going back to the Nest thermostat. You could put a Bluetooth chip in there, have it connect to your phone, and then be able to control it with your phone because you'll be able to transfer that sort of information more easily. That's now baked into the protocol. You don't have to build your own protocols in order to have these things operate back and forth.
That's nice.
Yeah, and so there's not a lot out there that uses Bluetooth 4.0, ironically. So this is a case of Apple really getting ahead of the curve. They see the technology going in a certain direction, and they want to be there ready to go when it shows up.
All right.
So it's not
necessarily they got something awesome in the wings. It's just more of their future-proofing themselves?
I think it's a little bit of both. And so this is... Now, there's definitely the justification is we're future-proofing ourselves.
Right.
The big benefit of Bluetooth 4.0 will come from peripherals, like the Thunderbolt technology.
Mm.
Thunderbolt in and of itself doesn't give you anything, but it's the peripherals that, it's the monitors and the storage and the external RAM and stuff like that. That's where Bluetooth 4.0 is going to be the same way. So one of the peripherals that I theorize is going to be used a lot is I think Apple is trying to figure out how they're going to standardize near-field communication for a digital wallet. Now, Google obviously has put a near-field communication antenna in some of their phones. They've added the software needed to be able to operate it. And so you've got another antenna. So you've got Wi-Fi. You've got your Bluetooth. You've got your NFC. You got your GPS. So they've just got antennas coming out of their ears. Well, I think Apple. I'm theorizing that Apple's going to try to sneak this one in. And I think what they're going to try to do is they're going to try to use an existing communication protocol that's already secure, and they're going to try to add it as a peripheral to. You'll be able to go in and they'll have secure Bluetooth swipe and goes in your grocery store and at your bank. So I think that is how they're going to try to get into the back door on near field communication. I think Bluetooth 4.0 for Apple is really going to be the route that they're going to take. The other thing that Bluetooth 4.0 does is that it has power down systems where it's a lot less energy intensive and consuming. And so it's kind of right up the alleyway for Apple. Doesn't use as much electricity. It works great with peripherals. It's secure. It's quick. It's got a pretty good range. I think it's the sort of thing that I would be shocked if you don't see Bluetooth 4.0 playing a big role in Apple's future near-field communication strategy.
Huh. All right. Cool.
So,
I'm excited for that.
Pretty exciting technology. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Nice. We'll see where that goes. So now I want to take a quick break for an unpaid commercial. but if someone would like to pay us for a commercial, you are more than welcome to do that. I will, at the very least, pretend to love it. But this one, there's no pretending required. I would like to talk about Pixelmator. This program...
Wait, how do you say it?
Pixelmator.
That's hilarious. I've always pronounced it Pixelometer.
Well, you added a letter to it. But it is Pixelmator. This is for you Mac users out there. Yeah, sorry, dude. This is basically, it's Photoshop for $30. That's that's the value prop. I bought it actually before it was on the App Store, and so I don't actually get this new 2.0 release, but they just released Pixelmator 2.0. And they added a bunch of stuff, and it's all on their website, pixelmator.com. One of the things they added is the ability to do shapes, which surprisingly wasn't in 1.x. So that's very cool. That's actually something I would love to have.
Now, what do you mean by shapes?
Like add rectangles and circles.
Oh, okay.
And bears, oh my. You can't do that in their 1.x version, but in 2.0 you will be able to. I built all of my D&D maps using it.
No, nice.
And I don't have Photoshop anymore. I just use Pixelmator, and it is awesome. For $30, I even think I got mine on sale. There was like a 70% sale one day, so I was like done, because it was just one of those no brainers, and yeah. And yeah, like I said, it's an amazing piece of software. If you ever move over, when you move over to a Mac, right? Don't buy Photoshop. Don't even torrent it. Buy Pixelmator off the App Store, because if you had done that, their update to 2.0 would have been free. I said, the App Store didn't exist when I bought mine, so I don't feel bad. it's not like a missed opportunity. But... it is an awesome, awesome program. It's Photoshop. All right. Here's one you'll like. This. Here's a cool feature that they have that Photoshop doesn't have, actually, to keep the commercial going. You know the magic wand select tool, where if you click on something, it'll do colors similar to it, right? You know what I mean?
One of my favorite tools.
Yeah, and you can decide, like, you know, it has to be exactly this. It has like zero tolerance, or has like whatever it is, like 100% tolerance, where, oh yeah, you're a color, so I'll select you. you know, and then you could do anything in between. And you know how you kind of have to like select that? You have to like actually type in a number in Photoshop and then test it a couple times to see how well it works. The way that Pixelmator works is that you click and drag. And as you drag, a little circle starts to expand. And however big that circle is the area of the different colors it will select.
Interesting.
Yeah, which took me a while to figure out how that worked at first, because I was like, why is it doing such a narrow band? Because I was just clicking. But when you click and drag, the bigger you drag it, the bigger it'll get. And once you understand it, you're just like, wow, this is really intuitive and works really, really well and is super convenient.
Man, I'm sure Donnie would love that.
Yes, he would. He would. So you can find it at the app store. Just search for Pixelmator. You don't have to do any slash for low bros, because we're, you know, super convenient like that. You just kind of look for it. It's an awesome program. Just came out on Wednesday. I cannot highly recommend it enough. That is literally all I use for photo editing. For, you know, making cool stuff and D&D maps and stuff. So there you go.
Nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I will have to check that out. I'm looking forward to it. Pixelometer. Okay. What happened? So that was Wednesday. What went down on Thursday?
Dude, there's like a lot.
All sorts of stuff.
I know. So, four things. And they're all really cool. Well, okay, three of the four are really cool. The first one, which I think points to the future, Nintendo lost some money. And not in the sense that, like, they don't know where it went.
I'm sure they would be happier if that were the case, because yes, there'd be a chance of them finding it again.
Yeah. Their fiscal year, or I should say for the first 6 months of their fiscal year, they lost $923 million. They expect that by the end of the year, they will have lost, they expect to make some up, you know, Q4, you kind of do that. But they will have expect to have lost just under, to put things into perspective, okay, I got to better read this article before I quit, before I keep saying it. But to put things into perspective, as the article says, the minus for the same time frame last year was just $26 million. Yeah, so they're not doing great. And it actually doesn't... Okay, so they are predicting... they're projecting a loss of... Oh, here we go. Here's my number. Of $264 million through the end of the year. So, okay, so here's what's going on. They've lost almost $1 billion in the first 6 months of their fiscal year. And, you know, this upcoming, you know, Christmas holiday season, they expect to make a ridiculous amount of money. But they still expect to lose $250 million this year. So just to be clear, they expect to lose money. And here's what's going on, right? The Nintendo Wii obviously is old. And they've announced the new one, but it's not for sale yet. So anyone, you know, who's in their right mind and thinking about getting a Wii is going to wait. At least they should. And then it also speaks to their 3DS, right? That is just, quite frankly, not selling well. And that's for reasons that I've stated before. Because I have my iPhone 4S, and it is awesome. I just...
There's nothing to do...
Well, I was going to say, I got this new game. It's called Jetpack. It's by the same creators of Fruit Ninja. The game normally goes for, I think it's only like $2 or $3. And I got it for free because they were doing a promo. You know, you had to like them on Facebook and jump through a couple hoops, but you got it for free. The game is free, and it's you know, the classic like jetpack or helicopter game, right? You mm-hmm. got to keep it in the air and go past obstacles, and it's like, okay, this would keep me interesting for like 15 minutes. They have integrated achievements and different like things for you to do. I've played the game for like over 2 hours, maybe even closer to four. And and it's fun. And the graphics are awesome, and it's just kind of like you cannot buy better entertainment than that. And I think this is what we're seeing. Is Nintendo's clearly suffering as a result of it. And I hope that they can pull it out, because I love Nintendo. I love their games. I love Mario. I love Zelda.
You know, it's
I like
funny.
Link. I mean, Zelda's okay, but
I think that for me, man, it almost makes me want to buy or ask for one for Christmas, because a 3DS. Because you know, it's one of those things where it's an impressive piece of hardware, technologically speaking, and you know, it's not necessarily the front of the curve for mobile hardware, but that doesn't necessarily make it different if the make a difference if the content's there.
That's true.
And you know, the biggest problem that I think Nintendo has is that Apple changed the game on content. You know, $10 is expensive, and I think they're still charging $30 for a game. You know,
well, and let's be clear, like this game, it's fun. The iPhone has the content. You know, sure. Like I said, it's not Mario and it's not Zelda, but that's still really fun.
Right, and it's got Wi-Fi, it's got an internet browser, it's got a nice camera. You know, even if you're getting just an iPod Touch, it's a significant improvement. And you know, all it doesn't have is 3D, which is, you know, I'll be honest, it's an awesome gimmick, but it's a gimmick. You know,
and yeah, at least right now, yeah.
Right, you know, and there's, you know, I personally think that there's a lot of potential for 3D and what it can bring to the table. I've had some ideas about what you could do with a 3D game to make awesome 3D games that would just, you know, really take advantage of the technology. But there's no one out there doing that, and there's no intention for anybody to do that at this point. And so I think that, yeah, I think that, it, you know, it's really, it's nothing more than cool. You know, oh, neat, cool, you got 3D. And I don't think that it's going to be, you know, I think if it really did start to take off, I think it would be only be a matter of time before Apple, you know, met them and with a really high-resolution 3D screen. And, you know, and then I think Nintendo's really in a place where it's just like they gotta get their stuff together, because they're going to be having a hard time real soon here. Well, they're in the middle of a hard time. And, you know, technology, Nintendo is kind of classically not the fastest moving company when it comes to technology. And that's really hurting them, I think. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, I hope for their sake, because they're a great company. And they have some fantastic products that they pull it out. But, you know, right now it's not looking fantastic. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So so here's some non-news for you. HP is staying in the PC business.
Yeah.
I think I called this a while back. No way. Yeah, so Meg Whitman, my illustrious boss up on high, came down and said that they did a review and they found that it's better together with HP and PCs. Surprise, surprise. I think that whole months long worth of meetings was getting the wording right on the press release. You know, like, how do we justify this? Because we're going to do it. We just, you know, we had to come up with some good reasons.
Right.
You know, and so they did, and I totally agree with every single one of them. You know, I was kind of like, duh. Interestingly enough, though, the one thing that was probably the most interesting was the tablet space. And Meg Whitman pretty much came out and said, we're going to do something in the tablet space. We just don't know what yet. I think this was the half conversation we had, now that I'm saying it, that we had over texting.
Oh, yeah.
Basically, she came out and I feel like this is public knowledge. She said at... I just can't remember these things, which means I should probably not say anything at all. But here we go. she basically said at the clearing price, which she uses eBay as her, you know, as her stick, which is totally appropriate given she used to run the place, is about $300. That's how much they're selling for on eBay right now. So, you know, here's how it works, right? HP gave away for $99, and everyone else is making literally twice as much as we are. Fantastic. And so, but her point was, even at $300, HP is not profitable with the tablets. We had to sell them at $5 in order to just break even, it sounds like. And so what HP needs to figure out how to do is make a tablet for $300. Is that going to include WebOS? Is it going to use the you know, Windows 8 software when it gets here? You know, I don't know. I still come back that I totally think that they should they should come up with something like super super basic, like just a browser. That's it. Don't even worry about apps.
Right.
Don't worry about storage space. Don't worry about the camera. Just give me a browsing device. Don't worry about multi-touch. Well, okay, maybe just like two-finger multi-touch. It doesn't even have to be super high-res glass. Just, you know, that is it.
Yeah, HTML5 browser.
Yeah, and I think that that would be a, I think that that would be a good, I think they could get it under the $300 mark. I don't think they could sell it for that. I think then they'd have to sell it for $100.
Right.
But then, but I think they would still make money off of it. I think.
I'm going to say, I'm not sure people wouldn't use it. You know, I think that people are becoming more and more savvy to the fact that, you know, there's, you know, an internet-only device. It'd be interesting to see. Google is obviously, that's their big proposition.
Right.
They're trying to get everybody on internet-only, and they'd be, it would be fascinating if HP beat them to it. But, yeah, I think that that's definitely something that they that they really need to get in on. You know, and the thing I keep coming back to is that, you know, they're talking about putting on Windows 7 and having, or Windows 8, sorry, and Windows 8 tablet. And I just can't comprehend what kind of a, you know, a tablet you could have that would run Windows 8 for $300. That just seems like, that seems ridiculous. I know that Microsoft really wants that. I almost get the feeling that Microsoft really needs to partner with somebody and make like a $1,000 tablet. Just a really high-end, it's like a supercomputer tablet. Somehow I think, make it so that it's essentially a laptop. It's the power of a laptop. Make it even a big screen so it's like 15 inches. Make it ridiculous, but just make it awesome. And I think that's the sort of thing that HP could work with Microsoft to do. And just come out with like, you know, and come out with a, this is a tablet, a touch-based tablet. And I think that would be, I actually think that they would have more success in that realm if for no other reason than the fact that, that's what, essentially Apple's best-selling tablet is the $800 tablet with the 64 gigabytes and the 3GS antenna. You know, it's the it's a, it might not be the highest, I think, but it's, I know that the cheapest model and the most expensive model are the two best selling. Okay. Everything else in the middle doesn't sell.
Man, 32 gigs sounds like plenty to me, but maybe not.
Well, you know, a lot of people buy that device and say, I don't want to run out of room, I don't want to run out of processing power. And that's the other thing they find, that even though most people buy it with a 3G antenna, that a lot of people don't use it. A huge number of people don't
use
it.
That's
fair. They buy it just in case, you know, and that's, they're doing the same thing with the 64 gigs. They're not necessarily going to use it, but they don't want to run out of space if they
need
it.
I feel like someone, well, I guess I own an iPhone, so that's my logic, but I was reading that you're better off to get the Wi-Fi and then get the hotspot on your phone. Sure, it might be a little bit slower, but it's actually cheaper.
But, well, that makes sense to me.
So yeah, interesting. We'll see where HP goes with this. You know, who knows? But non-news, sticking in the PC business. Hooray for us. I also thought it was interesting. Microsoft and Bill Gates, who we all think is synonymous with Microsoft, kind of shared some of their visions for the future. Microsoft literally came out with a video, which you can watch pretty much anywhere there's an internet.
What's the name of the video?
Productivity Future Vision. And then in parentheses, 2011.
And that'll be on our website, right?
It's already there. It's basically, it's an office, a Microsoft Office video. And it's a 6 minute and 18 second video. And after about 2 minutes, you can turn it off because they don't really show anything new. and it's here, you talked about one day like starting up a blog called Trailer Trash, right? Where you're reviewing trailers.
Right.
And this is one where I think it would get two thumbs down. Because, well, it's just like, it's not gripping. You know, what's the storyline? Why do I care that they're using technology? It's just like this music. They talk like once, and then after that, it's like eerily silent. And the music's kind of like the same throughout the entire thing. And you can tell like they're showing like different uses and interactions, but it's like, you know what, why don't you just give me like a day in the office? They've got some sort of problem that they're trying to solve and technology helps them do it. You know what I mean? Let's get some real actors here. You know, that was the power behind the shorts in Pixar, right? It was a real story. That's why it was amazing and why everyone wanted to see it and why it became iconic. And yes, it was backed by amazing graphics, and I feel like they could do the exact same thing here too. You know, obviously they've got a use case. Let's see the use case. Just show it to me. And furthermore, I'm going to keep stealing the show here. You don't have to show me everything, which I feel like that's what they wanted to do, right? They had a list of here's the 50 different things we want to show off. So let's figure out a way to put them all into the 6 minute video at once. And so as a result, it feels like a laundry list of features that is very loosely strung together, and as a result, there literally is no storyline behind what they're sharing. Having said that, though, very cool.
The technology that they showed was very neat. But yeah, you don't really feel the motivation behind it. And you know, it's one of those things where it's like, what is, you know, what one of Apple's the things that Apple really did is, you know, their that whole advertising and sale of their products, you know. They made you emotionally connect to the product, and you know, it's like with the iPads, you know, they're showing them and the music, and they've got somebody talking, and they're not, like you said, they're not showing you every use case, they're just showing you a lot of use cases, but you feel connected to the characters, you know. And it's like when they came out with FaceTime, you know, all it was video chatting. It's not really this like groundbreaking, revolutionizing feature, but yet they, you know, what did they show you? They showed you a deaf guy communicating with his wife. They showed you, you know, a grandfather seeing his newborn granddaughter. You see a person on their graduation day. You see all these like emotionally, like, oh my gosh, I'll never be the same. My life will be hollow if I don't have FaceTime. You know, I'm gonna miss out on all these great things if I don't have FaceTime. And you know, whereas with Microsoft, yeah, even though the technology seems obviously cool, you don't feel like with that video, you don't get that sense of like, man, I'm really gonna miss out on what makes life good without this technology. And you know, and that's I think what really you miss the human element of that technology. Yeah. You know,
so I will also say this, and I don't know if this is just a factor of, you know, the filming techniques or what, but all of their stuff is matte. I don't know if you noticed that or not. There's like zero gloss. And I kinda like it. You know, just to be honest, you know, it's like, oh man, it's just kind of there. You know, and it was interesting. I was sharing this with my wife, Jessie, and she was like, "Ooh, I like glossy much better than matte." Which I was like, "Whoa, who are you?" but yeah. So I thought that was interesting that all their stuff was matte, and I was like, "Huh, that's kind of nice. I could do that."
You must not be a fan of J.J. Abrams. With all this flares and flashes and gloss everywhere.
Yeah, he is into that. No, I just thought it was nice. I like them both, to be honest. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
I like the bright and shiny. But and then at the same time or the same week or however this works, so this was all released kind of the same day on Thursday, Bill Gates was doing a talk at the University of Washington at the Computer Science and engineering groups, and he was just kind of like speaking for a while, and he talked about a couple of really cool things. He's actually a pretty smart guy, if you didn't know that. there's a reason why he's super rich, which is interesting. One of the kids was you know, asked him for advice on getting as rich as he is. you know, and he had a good answer. You know, he was like, honestly, don't focus on it. And then he had this good quote. He also said that while he understood the drive to make a few million dollars, a level of wealth, you know, that provides meaningful freedoms, you know, something where you can pretty much do whatever you want. But he says, but after that amount, it's still the same hamburger. And then he uses an example of a place of a burger joint. It's a burger joint called Dick's, and he basically says like they haven't raised their prices enough to really affect him. It still tastes the same. You know, so he's like, don't focus on making wealth, focus on, you know, true purpose and happiness, and you know, whatever, you're fine. But one of the other cool things that he did talk about was like how a lot of the problems in societies are just poorly designed algorithms. You know, and he talks about how where was this one example that he had? He was basically saying like they were able to solve a problem of, you know, something related to malaria, where they were able to statistically analyze the trends behind it, and as a result of it, they were able to, you know, find one of the things affecting and causing malaria, and actually then go in and target that specific piece in this model that they were able to create. It's basically – okay, so I actually found the paragraph so I can say it more eloquently. this model was able to create different disease vectors with like weather and vaccines and life cycles, seasons, and everything. And so what they were able to do is simulate the real world with all of these different models. And what they were able to do was then figure out like, okay, what's actually causing it, and then go after and try to fix that instead of just throwing some money at it, guessing, and then going on from there. But it was just a very cool talk on TechCrunch. It's called Bill Gates on the Miracle of Availability and Applying Computer Science to the World. He just has some really great, thoughts and insights. And I also thought his thing on education was really good. How about this one? He was saying that storage is pretty much almost a negligible cost at this stage of our lives. And university or like lectures are incredibly valuable events, right? Or there's just incredibly valuable information on there. Why in the world aren't we recording every single lecture ever?
That's a great question. Especially for some of the great professors out there, what's his name? Feinstein.
Yeah, Feynman.
Feynman, thank you. I knew that didn't sound right. Feynman, those are some of the most listened to talks of all time because they actually sat down and recorded his lectures. And I've had some great professors with great lectures, and a lot of it will go unlistened to. But if you could go through and compile that stuff, and that's the great part about modern technology. You have an app like Siri that can understand what they're saying, transcribe it, and then later on, go in and actually analyze and look at what you're saying. Look at what they're saying. There's a tremendous amount of knowledge that's being passed around, and it really does make you. It is surprising that that's not happening.
Yeah, no. I totally think it should. Totally agree with him on that part. I'm actually going to do a personal blog post about that idea in a bit here. It was just good. Good stuff all around that he said. I highly recommend going over and reading it and just getting some of his thoughts.
For sure. So, speaking of recording voice information, recording sound. So Apple made a pretty big announcement this week.
Okay.
They open sourced their lossless audio codec.
Yeah, that's right. So what does that mean?
So one of the big things with Retina display was not necessarily that there's no point at which you can see the pixels. What it meant was that there's no standard use case where you can see the pixels. So everything becomes fluid. It becomes an analog image. Well, they did a similar thing with their music, where they have a type of file that essentially it has such a high rate of data coming in that to your ear, there is no loss in sound. It is the same quality as playing it off of like a record.
All right, makes sense.
So, and the codec is basically what allows you to take the data off of a hard drive and turn it into music. So the big news was that for a long time that's been proprietary, so you couldn't play that sound file on any other device except an Apple device. Mm. Well, this week they announced, well, we're going to let you do that. So the big deal for this, there's no immediate big deal. Other than it's just kind of cool, you might see it cropping up in other devices now. But there's been this kind of talk for a while going on about the idea of extending or surpassing minutes on your phone. audio phone calls, voice over internet protocols. Mm-hmm. And it's something that just seems so obvious, and Apple's really been resistant to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think we're starting to get closer. And iMessage is the perfect example of going down that road. Because they're no longer pushing the idea of, it's not text messages if it's Apple to Apple. It all sort of, it goes over a server. It goes over it would be text over internet protocol instead of texting.
Okay.
And so the obvious jump would be to, you've got FaceTime, you've got texting, so why not voice? And you would have these high quality audio files that can be decompressed and compressed at any end now that Apple is working with. So the big thing is, and this article was talking about it, it's the next disruptive feature of the iPhone. So the next thing that they're going to disrupt is the telecoms. And it's high-definition audio calls. Now, I don't know if you know this, but Americans have some of the lowest quality sound calls in the world.
I didn't know that.
We're the worst of all developed countries, and we're actually worse than a lot of developing countries. And it just has to do with old protocols that our sound networks, that our telephone networks are built on, and our audio qualities are terrible. But there's no reason to need that in the modern era. So it'll be pretty interesting. And I think how they'll sell it is they'll sell it like they did hotspots, where they're going to build the technology in, and maybe a telecom is going to say, no, you can't do that. But they'll just be like, well, it's there if the telecom ever lets you. And they're going to use these high-definition audio. And so you'll just be like, they're just beautiful sound quality, you know, just the best out there, better than any phone, or, you know, any phone conversation. And it'll automatically do it, saving you all your minutes for Apple-to-Apple conversations. It'll basically be FaceTime without the video.
Face.
And, right, yeah, it's just time. I think that's something that we'll see barreling down the tubes. I wouldn't be surprised if something got announced like that with the iPhone 5. I would be really shocked, actually, if it took as long as the iPhone 5S. But I think that you'll definitely be seeing that coming down the pike soon here.
Huh.
It'll be pretty exciting.
Very cool.
As they continue to disrupt the fat and happy telecom.
Bring it on. That just increased my data plan rates. No big deal.
Right, exactly. So, all right, man. So you got anything cool going on in your life?
So I got like a question, and maybe you can help me answer this, but I've noticed that, and it's like within the last week or maybe even the last 2 weeks, Google Reader is no longer in the main bar for Google. So you know that bar going across the top of the website? It says, like, you know, plus your name, Gmail, calendar, docs, photos. I believe it used to say reader, and now it says sites. And then you got to click the more button and go, and reader's not even number one there. It's like the second one down. When did this happen? And why? Does Google hate me, or what's the deal? Or do they know something, or are they doing something that I should be aware of? Because quite honestly, I use Reader a lot.
Yeah, it's my number two most visited website. I don't know, to be totally honest. And now that you're pointing it out, I'm a little bit freaked out. Because I don't know what the case is there. I use the mobile Reader constantly, because I think it's the best mobile Reader application out there, and it's totally web-based. I don't know what to say. I'm a little bit nervous, James.
All right. Well, I'm glad I could add some level of nervousness to you. So, you heard it here first. Google is doing something with Reader, and we don't know what, but it is disconcerting.
Right. You know, all I can say is that it's not like blogging's going away. So it would be shocking if they decided that we don't want that information about you anymore. You know, it just doesn't. That wouldn't make sense.
I
think it's probably
it's all
just
be
a
part of Google Plus or something ridiculous like that.
Oh yeah, that could very well be.
That'd be horrible because I like, you know, knowing what I have read and what I haven't read. I don't want the information stream. I want all of it.
Yeah, me too. You know, I haven't actually figured this out. Is there a way to customize that bar? Because that really needs to happen.
Not that I know of.
Yeah, because that actually bothers me.
You can customize the bar on the iPhone. On the Safari, you can do it.
Safari.
You can, or at least you. At one point in time, you could. Who knows? They might have changed it, knowing them. You see, this is what's interesting. They talk about, so total side note here, but you know, one of the joys of the web and the, you know, HTML is they're like, you can change it at will. You don't have to do any updates. And you're like, and they do.
And yeah.
They don't necessarily ever tell you about these things. They just do it. Whereas the nice part about an update is they're like, oh, FYI, we made some changes. You have to manually accept them by downloading these changes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like they recently changed Google Voice, the interface, and now instead of when you go to texting, it just being default, and you have to, like, you could just start typing, and it'll be in the text field. Now you actually have to click text in order to text somebody. And it's just one extra step for us super texters that it's like, this is super annoying. Why did you change it again?
Yeah, so I just an interesting side note. That's what's going on with my life, making observations and calling them into question. How about you?
Nothing too big. Trying to learn ladder logic basically is my my big thing.
One ladder at a time. Or yep. One step at a time, I believe. Left, then right.
One ladder at a time. You like to jump ladders. Ladder law. I don't know. Do we talk about this last week?
Okay. Well, you said that you were... You put the call out to someone who knew the definitive book on the logic behind ladders.
Right. So I finally found a book.
A-frames.
I'm hoping that it does something. So ladder logic is essentially it's a
logic that happens after the fact.
Not at all. I get it. not ladder logic. Essentially what it is it's a programming language. It's a graphical programming language based off of electricians' knowledge of switches and stuff. It's like old school, and I found a book. I had to have it transported across like four libraries to get it in my hot little hands, but I got it today. I'm so excited. So I'm going to have to power through that. Hopefully they'll give me some awesome information about it, but that's been my big quest this week. Just kind of keeping on.
Cool. Very cool. Well, I think that does it for us this week.
All right.
So thank you for joining us. I am James Furlow, and my brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. Okay, do you want to be in charge of the 1-2-3-1-2-3, or should I do it?
Well, I have to match you, right?
Yep.
Okay, you can count 1-2-3-1-2-3.
It's going to get really slow again. Here we go. 1-2-3-1-2-3. Wow, I actually think that was good. Except, I'll be honest,
terrible.
My head was going down and yours was going up. I was like, this is not... This is not going to work. But I feel like that was the best of all of them.
Yeah, we're practicing.